This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak! Yak!
First exposure to hip hop, they threw up, it's not culture, it's trash. Epidemic of rash, flashing the pan, the fad, just making us look bad. Alas, it got in the masses' grasp. Hip hop blew up.
Yes, it
as
did.
As the shrapnel fluid produced a lot of hits, so corporations built institutions on top of it. Something new that nobody knew of. It blew up.
Man, people are sounding like our podcast.
They sounding like it?
People let me know that they like it. Some Houston friends listen to it. Some Austin friends listen to it. They're like, hey, you guys sound pretty good on the mic. I'm like, okay, good. That's a validation.
That's a validation.
To make sure we're not wasting our time.
For real.
Anyway, it was a long weekend for me. I had a DJ in Austin, then had a DJ in after party in Houston. Houston had a big, huge, huge weekend. It was very nice Saturday. It's been kind of cold and rainy, but Saturday, the heavens opened up, and there's a big festival called Astroworld.
That
Travis Scott, who
the
seems
king
to be
of Texas.
Yeah, he seems to be at the top of our conversations almost every podcast.
I wonder why. Because we're in Texas and hip hop grew up, and he's that kid.
He is. And he's in, you know, everyone I know that's, you know, a big music fan or the people that I know from like the places I DJ, they all went. They all posted like, you know, things on our Snapchat, Instagram.
So is this 40,000 tickets?
Yeah.
Times $150 minimum?
Around 40,000. I heard other people say it was like 35, but either way, that's a great number.
We're talking $6 million.
A lot of people. And it was at Energy Park, so right outside the Astrodome.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a nice day, and everything kind of worked out.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big lineup.
Did you go to the show?
Didn't go to the show. Like I said, I had a DJ private event during the day, but
gotcha.
All day I was looking at it. And, you know, they started off early with people like Tommy Genesis, and they got Smoke Perp, Virgil Abloh, Trippie Redd, Metro Boomin, Sheck West.
Virgil Abloh, biggest clothing designer in the world.
Went on from 145 to 215.
I wonder what he did, because he works with Louis Vuitton. He's got this off-white brand that's like the hottest thing in the world. How did he have time to have a set? I wonder if it was fashion related.
I think all of that is going to be part of what we talk about. Also, Sheck West went on after that. We keep talking about. He has a big song, Obama.
And he's Travis Scott's artist, we found out.
Then we have... they're billed as Houston All-Stars.
Uh-oh.
They go after that.
Houston All-Stars.
Mm-hmm. Which in a later post is revealed that it's Bun B, Daisoho, Lil Flip, Lil Kiki, Maxo Cream, Paul Wall, Sauce Walker, Slim Thug, Trey the Truth, and Zero. So it has all of them. Then let's go back to the other lineup, because, I mean, they were listed on a separate post, but they're called Houston All-Stars. Then
the lineup came out Friday. The Houston All-Stars lineup was posted on Saturday, the day of the show.
With other information.
Right.
Like you know what second kind of things wave to bring in. Then had Gunna, Ray Schremmerd, Young Thug, Lil Wayne, Post Malone, and then obviously the end ending with Travis Scott.
Post Malone.
Yes.
The president of Texas.
He's from Dallas.
Ish. Yeah. Dallas, yeah. Ish.
So that was a big lineup, and then I just came in 2 o'clock, do the after hours like I normally do, saw some heads, so it was nice.
Travis Scott was there?
Travis Scott was at the club that performed. He did a couple of after the concert.
The after parties. Travis Scott
there
was
three,
there.
No, actually, there was three, at least three that I heard of.
He went
so
to
one, he went to Clay, then that's he went dope. To Spire, then he went to Concrete Cowboy, and
King of Texas.
Did 4 or 5 songs.
King of Texas.
That
since
was
when? How long has this been going? Like 5 years? Nah, not even that long.
I don't know. We have a special guest today.
He knows.
Matt Senzala.
Matt Senzala.
Say
Pusher
hey,
Mania. Our friend.
I don't know when Travis Scott came out, but I'd say a little more than 5 years. He's the king of Texas. But I mean,
no, he's the biggest thing happening right now. Yeah.
When did his reign start?
I don't listen to rap anymore.
Wow.
So I don't know.
So this is Matt Senzala saying, I don't listen to rap, but I'm watching Netflix Hip Hop Evolution. And there he is, my boy, talking about like triple OG Houston hip hop history. Shout out to Lance Walker, Mako Faneuil, all the Houston hip hop historians. Zen, rest in peace. But Matt, come on, dude. You don't listen to rap anymore, but you're on Hip Hop Evolution. That's the thing right now on Netflix.
Yeah, I listen. That's history, though, and it's part of what I know. I was there for a lot of these things. But I don't listen to the new stuff really anymore. I kind of had to give up. I mean, it got to the point where, you know, I've known you guys a long time. Two of my favorite people I've met in this whole journey. For a long time, I did a radio show in Houston, and one of the things we called it damage control. Me and Zen, may he rest in peace. I think about Zen every day.
Zen.
We, it's called damage control in response to the industry and to the major radios and what they do to, you know, their doors are closed. We had a totally open door policy. You could walk in there, hand us your CD, we'd play your song, which isn't the best policy. Mm. But for me, like, we did that as a response, and not every song we played was amazing, but it was from the streets, mostly from Houston. It was very independent. It was real. I do care about that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. It was like a brokerage firm.
But nowadays, like, to be honest, I don't like the new sound. I just don't. I'm old. I'm not the target demographic. Mm-hmm. When I say I don't listen to rap anymore, it's like some of my friends who can rap have come out with stuff that sounds like Post Malone or Travis Scott mm-hmm. or something like that. Like, oh, I don't want to hear that. Like, if you did that to me, like, if you handed me a you're not going to, I know for sure. But if Babu gave me his new project and it was like, get away from me, man. I'll tell you to your face. Like, I've had to tell friends, and I don't want to anymore. I really don't. Like, I don't care. I don't want to hear this type of stuff. Come on, it's just not my thing.
On paper, they say Mr. Blaze is a teacher, but I beat instrumentals. I'm mm-hmm. eating this simple, my paper and pencils like dinner utensils. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Come on.
It's fine. Great.
Come on. How could you, with so much knowledge and experience and wisdom, say the sound as if there are no Tobys and Fat Tonys?
No, I do. I know. I'm exaggerating. I love Toby. I love Fat Tony. There are Lyric Michelle. There's lots of artists who are amazing.
So you're just owning your curmudgeonry.
That being said, though, no, on that level, like on the level of all those artists, you know, I love Lil Wayne because I've followed Lil Wayne right. since he was a little kid, literally.
The Michael Jackson of hip hop grew up.
But, you know, no, these guys, they rap the same. The topics are the same. Yeah. The topics have been the same for too many years. It's 2018.
You mean the mainstream.
Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America. We don't have an X-Clan for these kids. Mm-hmm. We don't have a Public Enemy for these kids. We have some in the underground, but they can't get a cup of soup.
We have a Run-DMC.
Donald Trump.
We have a Run-DMC for these kids.
And now Tommy, I mean, Toby's coming out, which Toby's important. Mm-hmm. But, no, it does bother me, and I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear Post Malone. That shit sucks. Yeah. I don't care. He sounds like there's so much of the same cadence, the same voice.
But here's the thing.
There's no, you know, we are at war, dude. You know that. Mm-hmm. We are at war.
But Matt.
But like, they have nothing to say. They don't have anybody that has anything to say. So me, yeah, I'm old, and I'm complaining, and that's how it is. That's how I feel. So I don't listen to it like I used to.
So that's always been.
I used to have that same argument too. I used to be like, "Hey, all hip hop should have a message. All rap should have a message. What's up? I don't like this thing." Then one time I DJ'd
all hip hop has a message.
It does. I'm sorry. I'm just like a deeper meaning or a voice of activism is what I'm, I guess, kind of clarifying.
Mm, is that what you're saying?
No. I listened to 2 Live Crew growing up, which was actually activism as well. But I mean, like,
yep.
Yes, huge. It was.
I listened to all kinds. I mean, there's dance music and party music, but there should be more of a balance. And I know the people who are in charge. I know the people who are still in those executive chairs that are putting out these fucking records. A 50-year-old white man, 50-some-year-old white man has no business putting out Chief Keef, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, who the fuck are you? Mm-hmm. All due respect. All due respect to Chief Keef, fine. But you know what I mean? You know, you were there. You know what the revolution was looking like. You knew what was out there, man. You knew what the potential for this music is. Mm-hmm. You know it. But you're using your research. I'm talking about the industry. And for my whole career in this whole world, a lot of people have been like, I'm dissing rappers. I'm talking shit about this stuff, I'm talking about the industry.
You're talking like an adult.
I'm talking about the industry who are playing these games. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't like it. It's like, give them something. I have a 20 18-year-old little brother, 22-year-old little brother. I have an 18-year-old nephew. You know, we talk about these things. Mac Miller was their favorite rapper. You know what I mean? They're in that world. They like this stuff. They were sad about X-Tanation, sad about Lil Peep. Like, I talk to kids. I talk to young people. I know this is the new generation. This is what they're into. And I can be an old man and say, I think it sucks. I don't like the music or whatever. But, like, I can't take anything away from them. If that's what they're into, they're into. But I can say, I want to hear something I never heard before.
Right.
I want to hear different things. I want to hear a unique voice. Toby, incredible example of that. When Fat Tony, especially when he was coming out, like, so radically different from what was happening in Houston, but he hustled so hard. And he's, like, in his class, in his world, he's number one. I mean, he's not the biggest rapper in the world, but as an independent dude, like, just living and traveling and making it.
Who?
Fat Tony.
What about Odyssey?
No, I'm talking about Houston, but yeah, Odyssey, of course. People who made their own lane and they have something to say. Yeah. Exactly. And that stuff still exists, so I love that, you know?
But they're not dominant like you feel they should be is part of the point.
They're not even part of the conversation on a certain level.
Right. On a certain level. That's because now Migos is Run DMC. And that's the truth. Come on.
Actually bigger, in my opinion, right? I mean, like, think about it. Like,
for now.
Did one of the members of Run DMC marry, like, the biggest person in music? Like, that's kind of like Cardi B? Like, I don't know.
Russell Simmons is Run's brother. I think that's pretty equivalent to, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's big, but this is also, like, a big, I guess, cultural moment to these young people. I know, like, they don't have a message. To me, the partying thing is just something that's, like, always been. It's party music. Yin Yang Twins, always. The same thing as Migos.
Yeah, Run DMC was party music. They made Walk This Way. It was a rock song about nothing. You know what I'm saying? They made a lot of, like...
But, no, Walk This Way did... I mean, we wanted... When it was Run DMC, and Run DMC was just... That was an underground. They were on MTV and stuff, but they were not on the same level as, like, Aerosmith or whatever we're talking about. No. Until, but then that song came out, and it opened it up to a whole lot more people.
Absolutely.
And
which is why it's easier for them to be Migos.
So now we fast forward to this day where hip-hop runs everything. Like, hip-hop's everywhere. We wanted it to be in commercials. We wanted it to be in films. We wanted it to be everywhere.
It grew up, for better and for worse.
And now it's like, for better or for worse. And now it's like, okay, but let's not forget that there's more to it. This is a culture.
Yes, it is.
Travis, even Post Malone, any of them, do what you want. That's your cult. You're into it. That's cool. The kids like it. That's fine. But me personally, as someone who's witnessed this my entire life, I don't like the way so much of this stuff is the same now. These sounds, I feel like some of the tones and the sounds in the beats and in the music, I think there's deeper things going on. You know, Future, and I'm talking about Mind Control, but Future did a song recently about OxyContin. In 2018, man, you're an adult. First of all, and you also already admitted that you don't do drugs like that, man. But then you made a song about OxyContin. All these kids, not just rappers, kids dying all over the place, dumb on opiates.
Tell him what he sounds like to you.
You sound this. We sound like our parents.
Man,
that all that mute, all that Two Live Crew you listen to, man, it's all about this.
No, I was gonna
say, it's all about that.
No, my mom wasn't sitting downstairs like saying, wow, that Black Flag sounds amazing, or Two Live Crew, yeah, that's revolutionary. You know, she wasn't, I understand that. And guess what? I mean, if you want to go back, Led Zeppelin wasn't as good as the Mississippi Blues guys they wanted to be. The rock, the hair metal bands were not as good as Led Zeppelin. You know what I'm saying? Like, punk was a reaction to a lot of these things, and it was hard to understand for a lot of people. Hip hop came out of, you know, where it came from. Like, there's a progression of things that I feel like just went downhill, and it's not up. Look, I don't care who people listen to this podcast. I am 46 years old. I am not that demographic. I know that.
I'm 44.
I am not in that demographic.
But
I don't care.
Middle school,
but
so I'm a little.
If I sound like that, but I am also a guy who wants to hear what the 18-year-old kid is saying. I do want to hear that song. I'm not hating in general. I'm hating. I don't like the way this. So many of the same sounds. I put a song in and I'm like, I just heard this. That's how I feel. I mean, it is what it is.
A lot of rock and roll songs sound the same. A lot of other things sound the same. This is
and
a big.
Where are they now?
And this is the thing that I just in my opinion, I keep hearing all it doesn't sound like it used to. Yes, there's bad examples of rap music when we're listening to rap, yeah, right?
But he's not saying it doesn't sound like it used to.
You said everything is kind of redundant.
What I'm saying right now, there's just the dominant sound is just too much. It's so one thing right now. Like, and look, I'm a white guy. I am prejudiced against a lot of white rappers. When I see them come out, and I'll put more. I want everybody to have to go through and pay their dues and do what they have to do, man. But like, when I see the corny, swaggy white dude, it makes me even madder. I'm like, who is this rich kid? Like, Post Malone's dad is a Dallas Cowboys executive. Mm. He is.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Like, you know that?
No.
Yes, he is. Look it up. You know, like, for me.
Wow.
I can't.
But that does that deny the when you hear Saucin, does that deny like that song?
I hate that song. I love that song. Because you have problems. Because you're an apologist who has to make money as a DJ. Anyways.
I don't think so. I heard that song. I mean,
that's fine if you like it. I know
people. You don't think so? Well, what do you think?
I think to me, okay, first of all, as me coming from a person which English is my second language, I could give two shits about the words. The music that's coming out is jamming. And maybe it's like, it sounds like all moon. I don't really give a shit because I worked like the Ying Yang Twins told me one time. I make music for people who work 50 hours a week, and on Friday and Saturday they just want to listen to some shit.
That's fine,
and that's respect. Like, and then the thing is, like, and the I like Saucin. Now there's other songs that maybe they're just very poppy, and they carry the same kind of melodies, and they definitely stick on your head. And I think there is.
The same musical, beat, psychological. The same melody, the same tone, yeah. The same cadence, the same rap style, the same words practically. It is. It's fine. That's their thing. That I'm being the old man. I admit it. I fully admit that. But it is. A lot of it's the same. And so
in the end, it's like
my point, though,
does it jam or not? Gucci Man, yeah, paying not the best, like the lyrics and like, you know, oh my gosh, he has like he sounds like Chuck D. Definitely not. Do all the songs jam?
Man,
I guess I'm a DJ. But
dude, y'all know me. Y'all know me better than anybody, practically. What was my role? I brought a lot of that street music that was pushed to the side, that was not considered real hip-hop, mm-hmm. into that realm, into a South by Southwest, onto the radio, into this thing.
True.
I would argue in print, in magazines, in things, that the Fifth Ward Boys are hip-hop. They rapped. That's what they did. They represented where they were from. I went and fought for the South, like fought for the South for years. The South is the dominant mm-hmm. sound. Mm-hmm. Now,
and we talk about that a lot on here.
So I'm not like, you know, and shit, there was a lot of dumbass music, of course. And I didn't really like the dumbass stuff then. But today, my point is just, it's getting annoying. It's just annoying, man. We don't need to talk about this anymore. Like, I think that it sounds the same. It is what it is. Right. Like,
so,
and I like uniqueness. I like somebody to be unique. I don't want the white kid from rich long-haired white kid from California to come out and be the exact same as Migos. I don't think that's okay. I think it's corny.
That is corny.
It's real corny. These kids, like, little nerds are up here like, I'm swaggy, I'm this, I'm saucing, I'm blah, blah, like, shut the fuck up. Shut up.
Do you think Kendrick Lamar was like a breath of fresh air to that whole sound?
Kendrick Lamar is almost the only one. A breath of fresh air. He's almost the only one that we can go in this, and he's the best, for sure. And there's others too. There's lots of great rap. And like I said, I'm so excited for Toby coming out of Houston. I'm so excited. Like,
so
that real voice that's about to happen.
Our perspective is we are that first generation. We're 40 plus at this point. We're born before 84. So we're the parents of that culture now.
I see.
And we have to consider that intergenerational relationship. Like, what are we doing for the children, and what are we thinking about on their behalf for these next generations, two of them now, but also the question of what is our relationship with them, which brings me back to the Houston All-Stars. How is Travis Scott treating the history of Houston within his festival? I know you guys have two different ways of seeing it, and I think it's worthy of, you know, brief but real specific dialogue about, you know, where your perspective on it differs.
Well, I know the reason you asked me to come here is because I went on a Twitter rant maybe after a couple of drinks.
That's one of five reasons.
I know, but on Friday night.
I did not.
No, Friday night.
I'm going to go find it.
See, I didn't even talk to him about it.
I need a primary source.
I didn't invite you here for that. But There was a few things.
No, but listen, Friday night, the flyer came out with the lineup for Travis Scott's Astroworld Festival. That dude sold out like 40,000 tickets without announcing a lineup. It's amazing. They put together like a carnival atmosphere, made Scoremore. First of all, shout out to Scoremore, who did make, who really made this thing. An incredible company of young people who really grew up.
Who we talked about last week.
Who I love.
He compared them to Charles Attell, but Charles Attell was never a hip hop guy.
Charles, they bought him already. Anyways.
No. Yeah, but you remember Stubbs. Like, oh, yeah. That was like Sasha's Aces Lounge.
Man, I remember Stubbs when Charles Attell was paying me $150 to promote his shows. Public Enemy, Goody Mob. But, and then and Brian McKnight. And he was trying to bring Brian McKnight to Stubbs. And I said to him in 1990.
Wow. Throwback.
Seven, probably. And I was like, dude, black people in gator shoes. And because Stubbs wasn't. Quite what it wasn't what it is now. Like it was a mud pit. Yeah, it was dirty.
I remember Stubbs in the 90s.
I was like, black people, first of all,
the turn of the century.
In Austin, there was a lot of people who would be like, I'm not going to that white people shit. I heard that all the time.
Definitely. And, definitely.
But also, you go to see Brian McKnight, you're gonna put some shoes on, some slacks, you know, back then, you know, like you're gonna dress right.
Yeah, it's not the festival era. And you're gonna nobody's go stand wearing around. New Balance to see Brian McKnight.
No, but then you're gonna go stand around in like a field almost with no, that wasn't a good idea. I told him from the start.
Stocks.
We had everything pumping on KZI. The whole East Side was postered. Everything was promoted as much as it could. And he was so mad. He took off and didn't pay me that night because he didn't have that many people at that show. And I told him from the first moment, I was like, bro, don't put an artist like this in a pit that could be muddy. This is not Public Enemy.
Right. Charles Attell, Amy Corbin.
That's a tangent on the other side of things, C3. Which is fine. Like, okay, Scoremore, so shout out to Scoremore. But my Twitter rant was about Houston how he put all those people that you named.
I don't think it was there.
On that flyer, and then it said Houston All-Stars.
Well, you've seen Houston All-Stars being billed in other shows in Houston. That has nothing to do with Travis Scott or Scoremore. Right?
Right, so it's not a new thing anyway. But the artists that you act like you respect them and you're putting on for the city and all that, put them on, put their name on the freaking flyer. Yes, I do feel that way,
and I think they did on the next
post. The next day, and they made them in when to score more. People saw me screaming on Twitter. I don't know about that, but it didn't to me. It's like, first of all,
I'm pretty sure there's other people who felt your opinion.
Not really. Nobody cared. They just wanted to turn up. They don't care. I understand that. Most people don't agree with me or even think about that. I do, because I come from Houston from the days when the Ghetto Boys lost their distribution, which actually ended up being the thing that brought the light onto what that there's rap into Houston. When Geffen decided that they weren't going to put out that Ghetto Boys album, that was big news, and that shined a big light on Houston, actually. It was a negative turned into a positive to an extent. But I come from a long history of Houston being half-stepped on. And I also come from a long history of these Houston artists always saying, I'm not singling out anyone, but always saying, we're putting on for the city. Yeah, we're putting this on for Houston. They wouldn't fucking save you from drowning. Straight up. They wouldn't help you with shit. I've been there. I know these dudes. A lot of them are my friends. I respect them. They don't have to. Nobody has to do anything.
Well, Trey the Truth definitely save people from drowning.
That's what
though.
I'm saying. Trey the Truth. And
Matt was one of the people fighting for
DJ Mr. Rogers.
Remember he got people. Banned from the radio?
When Trey got banned from 97.
Matt was mad about that.
I was the only person that really said. I made an open letter that got in the Source, XXL, everywhere. Posted that all over online.
A lot of artists turned their back on him at that time.
All artists.
On that issue. Right?
All of them. Bun B called up the first morning when they said that, when the lady said that figures this would happen at a Trey event. Bun B called up and told him they were wrong for saying that. Killa Calleone went on a few weeks later for an interview, and he was like, I want to shout out Trey the Truth. They kicked him out and almost banned him too. He didn't get banned, but literally no one else really stood up for that, for this radio, in this radio station.
And at the time, that was the only radio station that played hip hop. So I think when they did ban him, that was a big thing because, you know, I don't think they had 93.7 to beat there yet.
What do you think about all the artists staying silent at the time?
I think they have a family and, you know, and they have like, you know, like it's all a business, right? Even the box is a business and you talk down on a business. They're not a church. They're not here. Like, you know, so I think I see everyone's side at the same time. Like, you know,
Trey has an organization for children whose parents are in prison. Trey has worked to build shelters in Houston. Trey works as a real activist for real. He deserves respect. He put that Trey Day on. giving kids immunizations, giving kids backpacks and school supplies.
Like jump on
and doing all this stuff. He didn't. Like, he did not shoot that place up. He had nothing to do with that.
That's how it all started.
Listen to me. When he responded, this is the station where hip hop lives or whatever. When he responded in a rap. He dissed them in a rap. He didn't go up in their face. He didn't run up in the station. He's a rapper. It's hip hop. He battled them, then got banned for saying something.
Right.
Now, that's not okay. This is a white person too. This is a white owned company and a white lady going and telling this black man who is in the streets of Houston, who does represent Houston, who helps children.
Mm-hmm. And flood victims.
He gets banned for saying something? No, that's not okay. And that's reflective of where I do trip out on Houston a lot. I take it personally. They're personal friends of mine, these people. These are people I came up with. I knew Trey when he was like 17 years old.
At the same token, I think he benefited a lot when 93.7 came up and had Trey's voice on. And like, he survived it easily.
Endured and kept
because
kept
I think the Houston underground scene.
No, he didn't survive it easily, but he climbed. He kept climbing. He survived it.
No, dude, you couldn't. If I put on a concert and I wanted to do a commercial on that crap station, and Trey was on the concert, I couldn't mention it in my commercial. Like you couldn't even. There was nothing. Like it's
he endured that, it like, and he survived.
He survived it. I'm proud of that guy. Like. I love Trey, as a person, as an artist, I am the one. People always are like, Matt, you're hard on these guys. I'm like, I've been there, dude. I've been there.
So
I was there.
Speaking of being there, I was there the weekend when you two met, and I feel like y'all don't even know when y'all met, but I wanted to
talk about you two, like me and Matt.
It led to great relationships with Nigerians and. You know, mixtape legacies and, you know, you guys seeing a lot of other parts of the world together. So what do you remember about that? Because this is almost the 15-year anniversary of when you guys crossed paths and all kinds of amazing things just began to happen. Between.
I had to look at Matt's face.
Well, the thing is, Babu says we met at the Aussie Showcase in 2004 for South by Southwest. It was at Dizzy Rascal and... Chameleon Air and Bun B and Paul.
It was the entire Swisher House.
It was right? When you pressed.
AP2, Austin Powers 2 was a mixtape series I did.
At that time.
And it had like some Austin dudes in it and I think a couple of Houston cats on it.
A lot of Houston cats.
And I think Houston music was picking up at that point.
No, it was starting. That's why I got
cover
in South by
had all the guys. It was big. It was a Houston All-Stars.
It was like a lot of people think it was like a national storm, but really when this thing hit set off, it was definitely regional.
Yep.
Southwest Wholesale had a big thing to do with all this stuff because people in Louisiana to Oklahoma, that whole region was jamming that. And I would notice it in my mixtapes. I would notice it when I'd play out as a DJ in the field of testing music out to audiences. It was working. And so, a lot of my mixtapes – involved that I met Matt at the show, I think with you, or at least I got your number, but I also remember going.
I remember when you came to the house we were staying at and brought me, you actually brought me the CDs and we sat and talked for
that's
a while.
When it got
I
real.
Remember that.
Yeah, that house right by the DPS.
In Austin.
Mm-hmm.
That's real. So what did y'all talk about? 15.
I don't even remember. Probably the same stuff we're talking about now.
I actually, because I remember one of the topics was, I don't know how to articulate this exactly, but I was like, you're like, there was a lot of press play DJs that, you know, mixtape, quote unquote, is a very loose term for a lot of people. And when I got your tape, I was like, you sound like a quote unquote real hip hop DJ playing, you know, real hip hop is Houston too, but you were mixing it up, cutting it up, doing like a real dope mix and not just, it wasn't just like a
production.
Compilation. This was like a real mixtape. And we talked about how you grew up listening to all kinds of hip hop.
DJ Rectangle mixtapes on the West
and
Coast were
like
my favorite.
Yeah.
Oh,
culture.
And exactly. I remember talking about that stuff because I was like, dude, this is refreshing because, you know, I get handed literally like every mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not mixed.
No.
But in the culture of hip hop, the DJ is a producer.
Yes. But the thing, like, and then I love doing mixtapes, and I still kind of do it. There's like a reason for it, like if there's like a greatest hits, or I don't know, like a certain genre you want to kind of lint like on, or you know, I think it's a couple of DJs who did really cool mixes. Those are always fun, but it's just like technology now. a Spotify playlist does my that job now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, the whole reason I was trying to put like 40 songs in one record and freestyle and all these things, like people do that with technology now, recording so easy. It's just it's more accessible through an iPhone. And you couldn't do that in 2004. No. You know what I'm saying? Back then, we weren't there yet. So the mixtape was definitely a great medium for all that. I liked it. I like the mixtape thing. Thank you, Matt. I didn't know you liked all my mixtapes.
Well, what do you mean? Of course I did. And, I mean, you think about it, like, in that era, like, Paul Wall, Chameleon Air, Chingo Bling, these guys were, like, real personalities. Mm-hmm. Really, Lil Flip. Like, making songs that jammed. Like, to me, I can understand people not totally being, like, in New York or whatever, not understanding the Fifth Ward Boys.
Ah, I see.
You know, but as this stuff was progressing and...
It was a little golden era of Houston hip-hop.
It was an incredible era, but it wasn't the first. The Ghetto Boys were the first time it blew up. And don't forget about Lil Troy's Lil Run.
We Wanna Be a Baller.
That's a big-ass song. Don't forget about...
Huge.
Don't forget about South Park Mexican revolutionary in the streets
we'll
at the time.
Talk about him on here.
Don't forget about, you know, like things happened. Like when South Park Mexican was hitting, those labels were coming down trying to poach stuff out of Houston. When Wanna Be a Baller happened, some of those guys got deals. It wasn't the same level and same thing as what happened when Asylum and all them came down with the Swisher House.
But that record itself was gigantic.
Man. So it wasn't
so
the first
this is
time.
I think that by Travis Scott, like what you're saying, that this if there was a timeline of Houston hip hop, I'm taking it back to this classroom. So you're saying one of the first things would be Ghetto Boys. Then what? Want to be a Baller?
I mean, I'm talking about big breakouts from the city.
Still Tipping was definitely.
That was a big tipping
That
point.
Was a big mark on the timeline. And then as well as Travis Scott, Astroworld.
Tomar's on the cover of the Austin Chronicle this week as the vocalist and kind of like the glue in the whole Williams family legacy. So it was cool to see
he is the
like
glue.
A different angle.
Yeah, right. Good. And every Houston hit that was a hit was produced by a couple guys out of Luling, Texas, Solly Williams, Tomar Williams. Like
Still Tipping was produced by them.
Sitting Sideways was. The whole thing, all the Mike Jones hits. Everything.
It's funny that's in the paper this week.
I remember Solly telling me he did Bar Baby too.
Definitely. He did Bar Baby. He did
Bar Baby, all Big Mo stuff.
He did Power Up.
That's Southside.
He did all in the paper this week.
Solly did Power Up. No, all
Power
the
Up.
I love Power Up.
Baby. All of the hits.
That was a song about ecstasy, though. So have things really changed?
No.
Oh no! So there's been songs about drugs and stuff.
Power Up's about ecstasy. Yeah. Like
there's no. I mean, but I will say. Personally, I've had experience with many drugs, and these pharmaceutical drugs from the government, man, for real, are not okay. I know from my friends. I've seen people die. I know what it leads to. I remember when hydrocodone was $1. Mm. Now they're like $10. So what do you do? Not me, but what do these kids do? We go out and buy heroin for $5. It's like half the price of what your Vicodin was.
So you're saying support your local drug dealer? Because the pharmaceutical companies are evil.
First of all, get off the pharmaceutical drugs on all levels for real. There's a lot of things, but don't go to heroin. But this is this kind of brings full circle my point of why we do need more political rappers. We need people talking about things in this music. Like, we're still in Afghanistan. We went in militarily to Afghanistan and basically took over the poppy production. Poppy production every year goes up and up and up. We control that. When we were younger and those pills were $1, they were you could buy them practically in a gumball machine in Houston. They were everywhere.
Ecstasy?
No, I'm talking about Vicodins and
but that was before the whole
Percocets
like.
And, no, listen to me. I'm trying to make a point.
Okay.
Xanax, all that stuff. You could get them like candy, mm-hmm. but then they took them away. Mm. You can't, that's not the same thing buying a $1 pill and buying a $10 pill.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to do at my size now, if I wanted to do like a hydrocodone, I would need two of those, like literally, like to feel anything. I don't want to mess with it or whatever, but that's $20. That's a big difference between $2 and $20. A lot of people who have this addiction issues and stuff, they lost their access to these pills. They can't do it. And heroin is now flooded everywhere. That's by design. Mm. There was a plan. We control that production.
You're saying the American consumer controls almost all drug production.
No, American government controls the poppy production in Afghanistan.
Because the army does.
We just do. And you can't tell me that's not by design. These are things that need to be talked about. To see this kid, Little Pete, 2 days before he died, on his Instagram laying on his back, like just dropping Xanax pills into his mouth, like 4 or 5 pills into his mouth. Like, hey, this is how I'm living, you know?
Yeah.
That needs to be the X-Clan of our generation. That needs to be the lesson these kids need to learn. I always say I'm fortunate to have had X-Clan and Public Enemy and things like that in my life. Growing up. Paris.
And J. Cole is pushing that lesson at the high level, right?
Which, thank God for J. Cole at this point. But
and you brought up like a name earlier when you talked about Mac Miller. That kind of hit home because I met him. I met Bun B through you. Bun B brought Mac Miller to the studio one time, right when he was hot. And that dude was a cool young kid, maybe smoking a little weed or whatever, but definitely not into those opiates or whatever the heck killed him.
These deaths have to be the education for these kids right now. It has to be the most important education for these kids to see this, because
we need to make a timeline.
Future just made a song about OxyContin. Like, that's not okay. Right now, it's 2018. Trump is the president. People are dying, overdosing. And people have overdosed forever. The 60s, 50s, whatever. It's happened. But right now, we know more. We know enough. Mm-hmm. And at my age, I'm going to say it to kids and talk to them about this stuff, because I was there. I did drugs just like these kids do for a certain period of my life. When I was young, we partied. College age stuff, it happens. But these drugs now, Xanax, the fentanyl, it is more dangerous. It's a mess. And that's what we need to talk about, because you also don't need to be doing these drugs at all, but you certainly don't need to be doing them at 12 and 13, man. Mm. And there's plenty who are. Mm. It's real. And I promoted plenty of music from Houston that talked about codeine cough syrup. Again, it's 2018, man. We know. Our friends are dead.
Popping pills is all we know. Mm. Man.
That's what I don't listen to.
I'm supposed to stop, but I can't.
I smoke, I drink. All these songs.
Sucking dick, and popping pharmaceutical drugs, that's every song. Mm. Outside of the few that we would still listen to.
And then that's why, like, is that why the lean got so expensive in Houston?
Yes. This is by design, man. Wow. It's by design.
The lean, I'm telling you. Used to get the pints so cheap.
Like, so design.
You sound like Alex Jones, like, back when we met. Not Alex Jones right now.
No.
Alex Jones. 2004 Alex Jones.
I want to talk about the new rappers. Mm-hmm. The way that Toby designed his career.
Oh, yeah. Social media. It reminds you of, you said it reminded you kind of Chamillionaire and how he designed his career.
New age, Houston, Nigerian, web maven, genius guy. Like, Chamillionaire was giving people email addresses when people were figuring out that email addresses were a thing to have, and, you know, having this community that he communicated with directly. He was way ahead of his time.
He had Chamillionaire.com, which had, I want to say, more than like 100,000 people. Like,
mm-hmm. I don't know the number, but it was heavy. Yeah.
And now Toby is going to terrestrial touring and all of that. You know, he's doing like a youth organization, play football in North Texas, start doing a youth organization, gets picked up by Eric Thomas, the hip hop preacher, the motivational speaker who has a million people behind him on Instagram. And then Toby gets a couple joints where people realize that he's like a, you know, if you put him in a genre of MCing, he would be like in an Andre 3000 genre, which means he just can really spit and articulate and say a lot and still be jamming and still be country and just kind of be in a real sweet spot of what he can do. Mm-hmm. And he's got his girl braiding his hair on Sundays and he keeps dropping these flows.
His wife.
Well, wait, that happened on Instagram. He proposed, got married, all of that.
That's
happened.
That's the part I didn't know.
All that happened in the story. So, he was already killing it with Get Twisted Sundays. Then they got married on Instagram in the process. It's all beautiful. It's becoming more produced. He introduces this female who's making all the beats, a lady named Nell. Starts dropping stuff, you know, the Instagram, the YouTube, it's all in sync. Facebook, and the content just keeps getting nicer and nicer and richer and more consistent. And then the designs and the packaging and everything just keeps getting better and better and better. And then all of a sudden he's on Sway. He's in the major markets. He's stepping out into the real world from the virtual world, and everything's designed real crispy. The shows and everything. That's dope.
I think he had the vision from a long time. But just for the viewers that aren't familiar with him, same again, his name, Toby what?
I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Rigvey.
And it's Toby, T-O-B-E.
Right? And everybody knows it's Toby from the SWAT.
And his wife, Fat, yeah, from the SWAT. A-Leaf. Just,
A-Leaf, you know, has a bunch of.
And he's a
big
lot
people
of
on Instagram. You notice
it's
that?
Designed well because he's also tied into like the Christian rap community because a lot of what he's kicking
like Lecrae,
is based on his belief. Yeah, yeah.
Yo, no, I learned that from me and Baby Rue were driving back from Houston and we were listening to some Toby stuff on Spotify. And then it went into random stuff, and I heard No Big Deal.
Yeah.
Who I didn't at first realize was a Christian rapper. Yeah. But then I got into the songs, and I started listening. I was like, man, he's dope.
He was like a tour guy and, you know, like Derek Minor's road manager or something. And they were like, man, you're too nice to be, like, just rap.
Yeah, No Big Deal. N-O-B-I-G-D-Y-L.
Yeah.
Dope. He was like, no, I was so happy to hear. You know, like, so they're definitely, I say I don't listen to rap anymore. I don't. On a big level, but mm-hmm. I love finding stuff that's still good, and I really think Toby can be a turning point that we need.
Boy, it's cold.
Good things from the social media.
So the motivational, the Christian, the H-Town, the internet, that's a real good intersection
and
for
you know,
2018, 2019.
Just Toby crosses.
It's just made me think of something.
African, like, married.
Man, that's Andre. That just made me think of something, though, because, like, anyone can make an auto-tuned, like, new rap style, like, just the simplest, most bass. Anyone mm-hmm. can do I could do it, and it wouldn't be great, but I could do it.
Yeah.
I can't do what he does. I can't do what Toby does. I can't
he's
do,
like,
I'm
he's
not
like Janelle
Monáe,
you know, that
that's
type
what
of
I
thing.
Like. That's what I want to hear.
You
like,
know it when you hear it.
No, but seriously, that's what I'm, that's kind of brings full circle to what I was talking about, like, the white kid with the swag who's a rich kid from California that's like, oh, my God, this is like this. Garbage. But Lil Xan, who I think sucks musically, I mean, he may become that transformation that we need as well with him going into rehab. And actually, like, even though his name is Lil Xan, which is stupid, and then he is actually admitting he needs to get off the shit. That's important.
Okay.
Mm.
I respect that, and I hope that he goes in that direction all the way and lives and survives. But I like artists who I'm like, whoa, you know, like, that's amazing. A guitar player, like, you can go sit on any bar at Sixth Street and listen to some guy just play a friggin' down, 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 down. But then you go and see, like, the dude who, like, wrecks it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spend all my time sitting listening to the down, 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 down. I want to hear him, like, I want to hear the dude who knows how to just bend them
Stevie
strings.
Ray Vaughan and Kill It Solo or something like
and
that.
And way deeper than that, man. Yeah, I mean, I was loving for, I had, like, a year where I kept getting sent back to Clarksdale, Mississippi, which is where the crossroads are. And, like, Mississippi, man, the Mississippi blues, like, real American music. Simple, but soul just exploding. Talking about real life. Talking about partying and fucking and dancing as well. But also mixing in real life and all kinds of things.
We call it the corrido.
Like, that, yeah, of course. It's tradition all over the world. But, like, when I think about the American music that blows my mind, the jazz, mm-hmm. like really complicated jazz that grew out, that people hated, and that grew out of like what mm-hmm. was born in New Orleans. And then these New York and Chicago people were doing more avant-garde and bebop came out and people hated that. That was like the new rap of jazz. Like, people mm-hmm. were like, this is garbage. It's not musical. You can't dance to it. But it was so brilliant too. Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of things, but John Coltrane played with Miles Davis. They were totally different. You know, they were totally Charles Mingus, his own thing. You know, like, these people, I want more revolution.
More revolution in the hip hop.
I want more of it. I mean, it is what it is. I'm old. I don't care. I'm not just knocking.
Was there
guys who I think suck?
Was the early 90s, like, I'm trying to say, when Tribe and all these people came out, was that like a big, because I was only like in sixth grade, right? When Chuck D, like Public Enemy, mm-hmm. I was like really young. So was there like a golden era of that kind of hip hop? And does that need to reemerge? Or
everybody has a different golden
okay,
era.
Yeah, yeah.
For me personally, like I said, I've benefited from hearing conscious rap. Like I learned,
okay.
you know, plenty. It's important. I think one of the biggest tragedies, there's a lot of tragedies, but when you think about Black America and the history of how people got here. Like, I know my father's family came from Poland. There's a lot of black people who don't know exactly where their family came from and don't even think about Africa and don't think about this dynamic continent that started so much of everything from civilization on down that's so important that people don't think about. But when I was younger, poor edges teachers, they made me think about that stuff. They made all kinds of people open their eyes to a bigger picture and a bigger world.
You're preaching now, because that's my life story.
And it's important.
You're preaching now.
Okay. So
that's where my name and connection to hip hop and identity and all that comes into play. You're called black if you lost access to all of that history. It's a default name. Then you got a brand name that was, you know, at some point an owner's name, like Blake's. Pretty sure the owner's name was Blake. And basically our last name has an S on it. It's more possessive.
Like an apostrophe.
Pretty much like brand name, you know, like Nike's. And so I feel you on that because, you know, I know for me, the process of naming my parents naming me and just everything in their mentality at that time, you know, when you're talking about hip hop generation, you're talking about 65 to 84. And when you're into the 70s, which is within that hip hop generation, black people in specific are doing anything they can to reclaim a heritage that's been wiped out and lost. There's no language. There's no religion. There's no names. There's no foods. It's just gone. You don't have a nationality. You don't have an origin. You're invented during slavery is what black, you know, essentially means. So that reclaiming part and getting information that actually is uplifting to, you know, people who identify as black, African-American, whatever, black folks from the United States. I feel that part. That part is really rich to me, culturally rich. To answer your question about De La and Tribe and all them, there's another rap, what's it called, Rap Evolution? There's a show about that. But yeah, they're huge. So if you're talking about the golden era of them, it was them, you know?
Q-Tip. But,
oh, God, yeah. He's still influential to this day. But yeah, he did a lot.
And so like the kids today are getting their minds blown by
Kendrick,
Lil whoever.
Oh, and that.
Well, yeah, and okay, no, I'd rather put Kendrick, you know, but yeah, I'm making a point, like
Pulitzer Prize winning Kendrick, like,
but think about
Prize winning Kendrick.
Yeah, but I mean, hip hop wasn't as big as it is now by any means, but the people who were into it back then, like, we got the message. It came
and those
to us.
People
that,
are in all these organizations.
Yeah. But like,
like Chase Infinite manages A$AP Rocky, right? So there are connections between the generations. They just look.
So,
like they look.
Do you remember Kanye's first album with All Falls Down and Jesus Walks and all those songs that kind of were like, I'm not going to say totally as deep as J. Cole or Kendrick was as far as being revolutionary?
There wouldn't be J. Cole or Kendrick without Kanye. I mean, maybe to an extent, but like Kanye is, I had
the
to learn.
The Godfather
that.
Of all? Like,
no, I had to learn how much of an impact, because I didn't pay that much attention to Kanye, honestly.
When I met you at his, like 15 years ago, like that was probably the biggest, hottest artist.
Yeah, Kanye was like Toby because he created real unique intersections for himself.
And made sure.
The influence, and he had a huge influence, which is what we need a new.
And we got to think about his writers, too, because it's not like these are Kanye's ideas, per se.
Shout out to Mike Dean.
He's a curator. But Rhymefest and Consequence and whoever else was writing, Malik Yousef.
Kid Cudi.
Right.
Everyone.
Yeah. They have a big part of that, too. The fact that he was a team player, rolling with a team, allowed him to accomplish a lot of greatness. Yes. And I think that some of these new guys are thinking that way as well. In terms of, I think there's a lot of collaboration at work. There's a lot of people who are newer and working together, and they're not necessarily the same crew, but they seem to support each other and, you know, kind of thrive as an ecosystem. I can appreciate that from the new generation as well. See a lot of collaboration, a lot of connection. I don't see a whole lot of rivalries and hating and stuff. I see a big wave. And so the same way that the sounds intersect, I will say that there's a lot of support, there's a lot of connection, there's a lot of collaboration that's apparent. And whether it's fake or real, I would never know. But you don't hear a whole lot of beef per capita for how many people are out there now. What do you think?
I think there's waves. What was the last one? Drake and Meek Mill, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, just, I mean, Future.
That was really interesting.
That was very interesting.
Future just did an album with Juice WRLD.
With who?
Future and Juice WRLD dropped a project. Quavo and Travis Scott dropped a project. Like people just do stuff. Drake and Future dropped a project.
You're right. And in way more...
Wayne and 2 Chainz dropped a project.
Yes, and they're doing it way more frequent
Styles
than they
P
were.
And Quali dropped a project.
Well, you can do it a lot easier now. You can do it in a room just like we're sitting in and put it out tonight if you want, which is good and bad. It's great.
Yeah, they do.
It's great for a lot of people. Then it's annoying that so many people do it.
Drake was kind of one of the first people to kind of make that. How you said he did that one album that won a Grammy, the first one. Right, and he recorded all in the Houston hotel rooms or hotel rooms all around wherever they toured. Kind of made that possible and kind of gave everyone the fuel to kind of do that. Like, hey, home studio, let's just drop stuff. And then I guess just technology in general too. I just remember Drake being one of the early ones.
Soulja Boy.
Soulja Boy, all in home. That was back in the SoundClick days, I'm thinking.
He made it off a laptop, right?
Fruity Loops, man.
In a big way. So, speaking of big way, basketball, biggest player on the planet, puts out a shut up and dribble doc. This whole shut up and dribble, you know, where people are telling certain people, certain entertainers, certain athletes to shut up and just do your job, which has never really been what was up. Like, nobody just shuts up and dribble when they have power. Like, people talk.
No, and this is all because there was the news reporter on Fox News, right, that told, I think it was Fox News. I can't remember. It was just someone that was, it was a story about LeBron.
About LeBron getting involved, getting involved, opening his mouth.
Politically, she's like, you should just shut up and dribble or something. And he's like, oh, that was just a kind of big slap. Like, you don't have a voice. You don't have anything. He's like, you know what? I do have a voice. I'm going to make a show and call it Your Words. Shut up and dribble.
Yeah, and I'm going to have the shop, you know, where they talk in the barbershop. And then I'm going to build a school in my hometown where you get a free bike and free college and all kinds of amazing wraparound services for your families. And then I'm also going to put out a documentary, Shut Up and Dribble, and I'm going to let Chuck D score the music.
Chuck D from Public Enemy.
Yep.
The most, like, one of the most vocal revolutionaries in hip-hop.
Yeah, and more importantly, Matt's what gets favorite. You through the door, as you and I talk about, Chuck D is amazing, but what gets you through the door, as you and I talk about, is the Bomb Squad. The same people that are producing those first couple Ice Cube solo albums are making Public Enemy albums. So nobody's like falling in love with the content by itself. It's the whole production sound and the whole drama of what's going on through this music and stanky beats and Flavor Flav and just, you know, just something you never heard before that's just really exciting. So now the new age LeBron, not, you know, it's not Barkley, it's LeBron now, is still going to Chuck D, who's collaborating with Imani K. Smith to co-score this film. And Chuck says, LeBron's a voice for the voices like Craig Hodges, which takes you all the way back to Chuck D and Common and whoever. Craig Hodges was playing with Jordan and was an outspoken political guy, you know, kind of from that same Afrocentric viewpoint that I come from. And now he's comparing LeBron James to Craig Hodges.
That's beautiful.
So that's pretty epic when we see, you know, the same way we were tracing this. Travis Scott, the new this and that. You know, you can still have basketball being dissected by somebody like Chuck D, who also had a, you know, the He Got Game track back in the day. With, that was Ray Allen and Denzel. But I'm glad to see that LeBron wants to go to this guy who calls himself Burt Blacharach, Imani Smith, and Chuck D, and actually doing this for LeBron's show. He didn't have to do that.
Nah.
This is dope.
That's really cool. And that's a cool way to end our kind of segment and kind of talk about, you know, the old versus new back then, now, and how those things keep intersecting. We'd like to thank Matt for being our guest. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, and don't ever shut up.
Don't ever shut up. And when old blesses new, hip-hop.
All right, see y'all next time. Ba 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 ba